This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 277, Virtual Fans. Hello, this is Michael Martin, one of the co-hosts from GamesAtWork.biz. Delighted to be here again on another recording episode with my co-host and friend, Michael Rowe. Over to you for a moment. Hey, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Happy Friday.
Something like that, maybe.
Trust me, it's Friday somewhere, I think. I've totally lost track of time now. I really have.
At least we know it's Friday.
Yeah.
I'm always just delighted.
You know how we know it's really Friday? Because we have our friend Andy Piper on the show with us. Hey, Andy.
Oh, yes.
Andy's only show up on Fridays. I was going to say, I'm always just relieved every week when it gets to Friday.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad you're here too, and we'll do the causality version. So if Andy's here, it must be Friday, right?
Yeah.
Or causation. Okay, well, it could be either. So
correlation.
Let's talk about some relationships of coronavirus and car design. So there was a really interesting autoblog article that came through my feeds over the last week dealing with the way that car designers are incorporating elements into their vehicles around pandemic-related scenarios. So there are two aspects of this article. I'll take the obvious one second, the little non-obvious one I would like to do first, and that is that we have some manufacturers that are looking to bake virus contamination out of existence by overheating the cabin to cook them out. And that's Ford. So I thought that was like, whoa, wait a second. I'd actually read about this before. But can you imagine, here in North Carolina summers, you can get your car cooking well above that anyway.
That was right? My exact feeling. I was like, so they've driven the car in North Carolina summers or Georgia summers or California summers.
Yeah.
Just don't turn on the AC and you're fine.
And what happens in cold countries where suddenly, you know, you start baking the car in the middle?
The snow melts on it and then free freezes.
Exactly. You suddenly got this kind of, completely cooked in, frozen in car. Amazing.
Yeah, they could freeze their cars in carbonite.
No, I mean, look, we may, and we are laughing about this, but it does go to show how seriously every industry is thinking about. Or either how seriously or how, you know, outlandishly every industry is thinking about how to solve some of the new problems that arise, right? And I think probably none of the three of us would have suggested, hey, Ford/other car companies, why don't you just build a feature that cooks the car for 15 minutes at a time? But people have come up with it.
But it's a logical reaction, isn't it? I mean, you know, you could say that you're creating easy to clean surfaces, right?
It's innovation, and they're trying something, right? I mean, is it a logical answer? I don't know if that specific one is logical. It does address one statement, but there are other, you know, bacteria and viruses that thrive in high temperature. So are you also going to have a freeze setting?
Maybe so. Or
maybe just make a better heater and air conditioner for your car.
Maybe. Well, that could be cool.
And I'm trying not to be cynical about it, but, you know, I get what they're trying to do and you know, respect, right? I actually find it more interesting about, you know, what Kia and Hyundai are doing around changing the materials on the interior to be less prone to surface bacteria, especially when you think of the shift from everybody owning their own car to more and more people using car riding services, or ultimately we go into a self-driving car mode where people don't own cars, but you pay for transportation as a service. So having a safe and secure vehicle interior becomes more and more important as the change of driving behavior.
This is one of those stories, though, that catches one's eye because of the eye-catching image, which has isn't referenced again in the rest of the article.
No,
and for those on audio podcast who haven't yet clicked through to the link in the show notes, it's kind of this cool kind of like non-dashboard, which is kind of a shelf with these kind of digital screens, kind of like, I don't know, folding out as leaves across the whole dashboard. And it looks interesting, but I have no idea how it relates to the story that I've just read.
Yeah. and it actually is really interesting. If you look at more and more modern car designs, interior designs are being developed in such a way that the steering wheel and other position is either irrelevant or completely interchangeable on right and left side of the car without having to make a European version of the car or an English version of the car or a South American version of the car, right? That the interior design lends itself for that modular change without radical change to the rest of the vehicle.
Well, and being that much more flexible, you know, allows you to have more of a world car design. I mean, something that Ford was aspiring to already for quite a while with, I think, wasn't it the Escort was like one of the first versions of that to be very modular in the approach and being able to shift where the steering wheel was depending on what market it was going to go. That's a really intriguing point, Michael. I hadn't thought about that before.
But yeah, look at the inside of a Tesla, right?
Mm-hmm.
The older cars tend to have that, I almost want to call it a wall in the center between the two front driver's seats, unless it's, you know, a bench seat, which, gosh, we don't even have those anymore, right? but they have some kind of hump or wall or whatever, and it has to do with the way the drivetrain is positioned, and that then changes the shape of the driver position, which looks more like a cockpit, so you have all these rounded things kind of focused towards you as the driver. Well, if you flip that around, you have to do a lot of design choices to get it to the right-hand side versus the left-hand side, and they're getting rid of that. It's just Andy, you did a great job of describing that picture. It's like a shelf, which I wouldn't have called it that, but that made it. I immediately visualized it.
Yep, exactly. So we love cars on this show. If you've are a long-term listener, you know that. And we love design on this show, too. And something that was related to the two of them beyond the article that we just covered here was a note or two about how the emoji for a car it is different in depending on which platform you're looking at. And almost 2-1, the emoji for a car is... I've heard them described as childlike or, you know, or not really a car that most people go, yes, of course, that's a car. And we've had conversations, I think, about the emoji language and the emoji, not language, lexicon, what's promoted, the different versions of all these things. And you want to have a lot of flexibility in them based on the platform. But there's several of these cars that wouldn't make me happy and say I'd like to even drive that or be around it.
Also, it assumes,
I like the messenger car. If you click over
I was going to say the messenger one's pretty cool. Sorry, Mike.
Right?
Go ahead.
The messenger car is kind of cool.
I find it interesting that almost all of the ones that are showcased in this article are red vehicles.
Yeah.
Because presumably, you know, you only want to drive a car if it's red. I mean, they also haven't gone through and looked at... There are other vehicles that are available under the emoji lexicon. I think that you're probably going to find some unusual shapes and things as well. The thing with emoji are that they are, you know, not intended to be realistic, micro representations of real-world objects. They're intended to be... you know, cartoony
hieroglyphs.
You know, hieroglyphs. Exactly, hieroglyphs. Exact. Precisely right. They're intended to be symbols that they're in icons that symbolise the thing that you are referring to. I think in most cases here of the 16 that are in this article. There's some more as well. Okay, the front-facing ones.
A few more down below.
I hadn't gone down to the front-facing ones. You know, they're recognizably what they intend to be. That, yeah, as you say, they are. Some of them are somewhat blocky, childlike, kind of Fisher-Price toy style-y. But I'm not directly offended by most of them, and I won't name the ones that I am directly offended by because I don't want to upset anybody. But but it's interesting for sure. I mean,
yeah, we've had the same thing. That HTC one, no.
We had the same conversation with other emoji over time as well, and how different companies have chosen to represent things in a realistic or childlike or you know, less less threatening manner, you know,
less severe, right? Yes,
so exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, it struck me as funny, and now that you mention it too, Andy, it's like, okay, of the 16 featured ones, all but two or all but three are red. So yeah, that's an interesting thing. I guess I don't think of red as my first car choice of colors, but Michael,
I do.
You might.
that's a no-brainer.
All right, I had two cars that have both been silver, so yeah, I haven't really considered it either, but it did strike me.
My favorite car is a British Racing green vehicle. Yes. So I'm excited to go get that back from the shop later today, so that'll be good. We love Rallego. As I think you all know, we talk about it almost all the time. And this particular article from Mashable was an example of a robot, which we love too, building a house, not out of Lego, but out of bricks. So you could drive this vehicle up that has the robot attached to it with a load of bricks. And a few hours later, you have now the outline of a house, including the glue in between the bricks. And you're off to the races, so to speak.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this video was actually a couple of different things. One, it reminded me of, gosh, was it 5 years ago? The robot that would build a house in like 16 hours just pouring cement, right? Mm-hmm. It was the cement, super fast dry cement building house, and it would even put in all the conduits or the positions for the conduits.
For the electricity, for everything else.
This one, I was actually less impressed by because it was fairly just bricks, right? I didn't talk about the conduits. Matter of fact, and I don't know if this was Mashable or whoever posted it on Mashable, there was a speaker at the beginning of the video who was trying to talk, but someone had overdubbed music over the entire video. So it's like they took the video from the researchers or whoever built it at Fast Brick and took a subset to make their video on Mashable. So I actually haven't had a chance to do it yet, but I'm going to have to go and
find the source
material.
But I'm concerned that this house is literally stuck together with adhesive.
Yeah, me too.
like we talk about Lego, we talk about interlocking bricks and the system, and then you know, real houses are built, you know, frequently using cement or mortar or something, and then this thing is literally gluing some stuff together. And then we talk about baking heat in Texas or whatever. You know, are we going to find that our houses suddenly start?
Just go fall apart.
Fall apart. I'm sorry. I know. I'm being very flippant here, but I, and clearly technology advances in those areas as well. So I am deliberately being flippant, but I'm asking questions, right? I'm not attempting to.
Well, I was also surprised at one point in the video, the bricks were lining up instead of overlapping.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I know this is a structural integrity. Video. This is a demo video because that's the horrible way to play those bricks.
Well, we know that from our Lego experience, don't we?
Well, no. Actually, my dad was a bricklayer for a while. And so there's a lot of skill involved. I mean, this is one of those professions that you become skilled up through time and mentorship, etc., right? I know why they're doing it. I think it's cool. they need to work on their design. and no glue, please.
Well, you have to use some kind of adhesive in the end, right? I mean, even cement theoretically is an adhesive.
Yeah, so
well, you yeah, cement. I mean, I was more. Being flippant when I said that, but yeah, I mean, you're right about that, of course, but it's interesting to know what materials glue to what materials via and how effectively in a building, in a construction situation where they're building a, let's say, a two intended to be lived in house. Again, maybe I'm mm-hmm. maybe I'm being too reductive about it, but it's something that I thought about as I watched the video.
Yeah, that and the Kaggle. Yeah. Kaggle, yeah. Was it from the Lego Movie?
Yeah, oh, speaking of
release the Kraggle.
The Kraggle. Speaking of you know, little builders, I just wanted to chime in for Michael's sake and Andy yours too, that I am on, I think, episode 7 of season 1 of Fraggle Rock.
Oh, nice.
Well, like I've been enjoying it.
Not the short ones, the actual... Oh, no, you've gone back to the beginning.
Yeah, the...
Or the new series.
The full-on ones, yes. I figured, from Apple TV. I needed something to kind of get all the bad news out and just kind of sit back and hang out in Fraggle Rock for a while.
Oh, that's awesome. I haven't started it yet. My family here that I'm, you know, co-located and in our COVID bubble with have already given me grief from watching just a couple of short Kraggles.
Unleash the Fraggle.
I intend to do it at least on my phone because I can do that away from the big TV because I have Apple TV on the phone. Yay! So I didn't know that you had some professional bricklaying experience in your family, but Michael, I think you know that I have some professional fan experience, and this next article was one of those things that kind of grabbed me a little bit of a weird way. So the Verge put an article out about how in Spanish soccer stadiums, as they're beginning to open up and return, they are now doing computer-generated crowds replete with fan noises during the game that are piped in for those computer-generated crowds. I suspect you have an opinion on this.
You would expect right or suspect right.
So how do you feel about virtual fans making piped-in virtual noises?
So here's the thing. I'm the grumpy old man today. So Bundesliga has had games on for about 3 weeks now, I think. Mm-hmm. And I've been watching some games. It's, again, a good escape to go back and watch some soccer. And it's funny because the first week they were really, really good about social distancing. Everybody had masks when they're not on the field. They didn't do a lot of high fives during celebrations. It was maybe forearm bumps at the most, etc. And the very first game was just the sound of the stadium and the talking heads blathering over the show, right? Over the game. And you could hear the players yelling to each other. You could hear the coach coaching. It was fantastic. I loved it. The next week, they decided they needed crowd noise. So they started pumping in crowd noise to the games. I don't think the noise was in the stadium. I think it was only on the TV feed. And uh-huh. The first week they had the mix really bad, so they had it up so loud that you couldn't hear the announcers blathering on.
That's a problem?
Well, only to the point where you knew they were saying something.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they completely blathered them out, right, I'd be okay with that. So the third week they fixed that, and they rebalanced everything and pulled down the crowd noise to where you could still hear the players and the coach some. That finally got to at least a good sound mix. But I don't need fake crowd noise, right? I like to hear the guys sitting up in the stands who are the other, you know, the bench players, right, cheering on their team. I like to hear the coach. I don't need to hear, and they were actually using, and I can't remember which game it was, but they actually had a really good person driving the mix to give you the type of sounds that would occur when certain events occurred in the game, so you knew you should look up if you're a person who watches a game by not watching it and just listening for crowd noise before you look to see what happened. So I get what they're trying to do. I understand that some people feel the need for all that extra noise, but if you're not there at the game and feeling that communal experience of everybody yelling and cheering and having a good time, I think it's superfluous. What do you think, Andy?
I think you definitely had an opinion, and that's good. I honestly, I haven't watched the videos, and I surprisingly enough, as a Brit, I don't watch enough soccer to have a very strong opinion. When I read the technical way that they're implementing this, it reminded me of a game that you may or may not remember from the 1980s and 90s, probably early 90s, called Sensible Soccer.
Yes.
These little tiny kind of pixelated... My brother loved this game and used to play it a lot on the older systems, and it just came out, I think, on Xbox Game Pass as a 360 remaster that you can play under emulation on the Xbox One. And I'm pretty certain, and I was just Googling as Michael was speaking to see if I can find like an animated version of like Sensible Soccer Crowd, because I think that it's very similar in terms of like different colored pixels kind of popping up and down when people score. Help me understand, are they piping noise into the stadium, or are they piping it into the broadcast so the players just play the game?
Broadcast feed.
Right, okay. So I don't have a very strong opinion on it, to be honest. But I'm fascinated by the way that they've implemented it technically, because I think that's a cute little semi-cheat. And if it does add for some viewers to the experience, then I think it's kind of neat that you can fool the brain or fool people's sense of immersion in such simple ways.
Auditory reality.
So here's two takes for me. So take number one, I am not a fan of laugh tracks on sitcoms. Exactly. So to me, this feels like a laugh track. And it is the audio clue about what you as the viewer listener ought to be doing. And we could go at length on this, and I won't right now, but maybe another time I'll go full on rant. The second thing is, it implies something really interesting, right? Because you can do computer generated advertising. So the advertising that you see on the edges of the stadium can be tailored to the individual. So there's a thought.
Bundesliga does it.
Yeah. And there's a thought here of, you could do even more of that. So can you imagine a way of saying, hey, I want to select a number of options for my optimal viewing experience, where I want to pick, you know, do I want crowd noise or not? Do I want partisan crowd noise or not? Right. So if I'm watching one team versus another, I might say which team I want to hear the crowd noise from, or the fake crowd noise, or any crowd noise. Or I might like to pick, you know, who are the people, right, who are in the stadium, in that virtual stadium. What kind of colors are they wearing? So there's a variety of things that could be done. And Sensible Soccer, Andy, love that. That was something I had a lot of fun playing too. So it's not on iOS. I was just checking. Hey, is there a Sensible Soccer on iOS? It's not really.
Honestly, as soon as I saw it was on Game Pass or whichever channel I got it through, I downloaded it. And of course, yeah, inevitably it's not quite what you remember somehow, because you've moved on and the world has moved on. But yeah, it's still a lot of fun, and it has a lot of meaning for me personally. It was, and those simple games, I'm trying to remember the company that came out with, who was it that came out with Sensible World of Soccer or Sensible Soccer? They were the ones that produced a ton of like classic sort of 80s and 90s games as well, weren't they?
It was an Amiga game originally, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing too, but I didn't realize it being an Amiga. It was a PC game, right?
Sensible Software was, of course, the company, but they also had, didn't they also have Cannon Fodder, which was the one where you kind of were sending troops into a battle zone, but it was also similarly kind of pixel, tiny little pixel people, and I think they had some others.
Oh,
anyway,
and it was
that was a little rat hole.
It was a UK company. I didn't even realize.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We were sometimes okay, you know.
That's just another factoid I didn't know.
I mean,
80s and 90s.
Cool.
Nice. I love it. Well, we are getting close to the end of our time today, which is unfortunate because we have even, you know, more things to focus on and do. So, Michael, why don't we turn to you, because I know you've got some exciting things that you're dialed into for the next couple of days.
Yeah. So just to kind of wrap up WWDC is coming up in a couple of weeks. Matter of fact, a little over a week and a couple of days. And so my experiment going on right now is to see if I can not have the same experience as last year, where my MacBook Pro got toasted and completely bricked by installing the beta while I was at WWDC, and I spent a day and a half of the actual conference trying to get my machine working again.
With expert help, as yeah, I mean, recall, too. From
down to an Apple engineer, literally plugged an SSD drive in and said, this is going to format your drive and make it like it just came from the factory, but with the beta on it. Because it was an ugly thing. So I found the instructions to actually setting up a secondary boot operating system on the drive. And have it set as a pristine Mac Catalina environment, waiting for Monday in a week, when it will then upgrade that second drive to whatever the macOS beta is, so I can start doing my summer development activities. And it shares the data drive with my normal stuff, so I'll be able to test it out on both sides. And I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, nice.
So... cool stuff.
macOS Avalon.
That'll be good fun.
macOS Avalon.
Is that the code name? Has anybody heard? I've not paid attention.
That's the rumor. Yeah, the rumor is it'll be Avalon because it's Catalina's only city. And it'll be an in-between release where they do the cleanup from the previous year.
They have a lot of work to do there.
That's a rumor. It's a rumor. Who knows? There's a rumor.
I would be...
Well, that'll be good fun.
I would perfectly
that
be
was something I read last night. Release. So. I read rumors all the time, so I'm happy to report them on my podcast.
Andy, do you have any camping in your future here, or anything else going on with you shortly?
Well, no, the weather's taken a turn over here. In fact, it's rained quite heavily. No camping. I do have a Switch arriving.
But game playing.
I have a Switch arriving tomorrow, woo-hoo! So looking forward to getting back into some of my mobile gaming. I've obviously had the Xbox available, but so doing some more Switch stuff, reconnecting with my friends who are addictive, trading and capitalist. No, other than that, I'm also looking forward, as of course, to Dub Dub, and but in the pre-show we briefly spoke about the PS5 reveal yesterday, or the gameplay and design reveal. I'll be curious to see how that pans out across the rest of the year as they reveal additional functionality and features, as inevitably will happen.
Cool.
That's awesome. Just
what about you, Michael? Any fun?
Just looking here too. I've been kind of eyeing a Switch myself, but they continue to be out of stock around here, so I will be catching up on that shortly. But the nice thing that I'll be doing is some grilling this weekend, so I'm looking forward to that and some nice things out on the barbecue. All right, well, everybody, we wish you all a very pleasant weekend as well, and looking forward to catching up on all the tech news and ideas and fun good stuff the next time when we're back together again on...
Games at Work.
Games at Work.
.biz.
.biz.
Biz.
See ya.
Bye. See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.